powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Emerald King Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it's Jason Churchill, Prospect Insider. Jason, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you guys doing?
We're fantastic. Thank you for asking. We're looking at a Mariners team now that's coming off three consecutive series wins, heading into a tough one against Houston. When you look at what needs to go right in this series, what's maybe one of the first names that popped to your mind?
Robbie Ray has to beat the Astros. That's their best chance to shut down the Astros lineup in this series, and they have to get that guy going. So that's the first thing that jumps out at me. And you know what? It's funny. I've been talking about this a lot. Robbie Ray still lends a ton of confidence for me. I see Robbie Ray on the slate to go, and I'm like, Seattle could win this game 3-2 tonight, 2-1 tonight. Every single time, despite the fact that in his 11 or so starts, he's been quite uneven and hasn't been as good as everybody expected him to be. So get it off to a good start.
Now, Jason, we haven't had you on for a while. So, one, it's great to have you on. We missed you, buddy, and it's awesome to talk with you. But, two, I feel the same way, and I'm having a hard time figuring it out because, you know, the results have been very clear and very obvious. However, you come back to yourself and you keep saying, well, it's just that one inning, Jason, that one inning. And if he can eliminate that one inning, you know, this guy's been pretty dominant outside of it. What has been the overall problem for him?
Yeah, I see a little bit of a dip in the stuff, just a little bit. I still am not seeing quite the top end fastball slider combo that, you know, at least consistently that we saw the majority of last season. So what's happening there, like if he's giving you 90% stuff wise and he's giving you 90% command wise of what he could be and has been in the past, you're just more susceptible to having that inning. And sometimes, Jake, it's not even an inning. You go back to Baltimore. Like, if he throws a fastball away to Rougned Odor instead of hanging a pitch, it's a completely different game. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying Seattle wins that game because it turned into a little bit of a blowout, but it was a close game at the time, and that was the one inning, but it was really just the one at bat. It's really Ryan Franklin syndrome. I mean, if you're old enough, and not one of you guys are, to remember Ryan Franklin's interviews after every game when he gave up 5 earned runs in 5 innings, it was like, man, I just had that one bad inning. That's what's happening to Robbie Ray, but right now, you can usually point it to one at bat. And not all of them have been 3-run home runs. There's been some bleeders through the left side. There's been a poke to the outfield that dropped that, you know, usually won't. He's really close to getting where he needs to be. And I don't know that he's ever going to put up numbers like he did last year, but we're seeing the strikeout numbers. We're seeing the velocity mostly come back. This is a number two starter. And that's just the confidence I have in him. And, you know, Scott Servais likes to win that first game of a series because it really sets you up, and that happened in Texas. That sets you up, gives you two chances to win the series in a 3-game set, and that's tonight for Seattle. If you go in, you score a few runs off Javier, and Robbie Ray shuts down the Astros, you're in good shape. You have 2 days to win that series, and Seattle seems to respond to that. So I'm looking for Robbie Ray to kind of take the, you know, to be the face of the franchise, guys.
Exactly. Face of the franchise
from whoever that is right now. And win that game for him.
There's another name we were talking about, Eugenio Suarez, who was obviously not just a huge part of yesterday's win, but has been such a pleasant surprise this year. Now, Jason, you knew a lot about Eugenio Suarez prior to the trade and before he came to Seattle. So maybe his power and ability, it's not like a surprise, but given that I was expecting so much from Jesse Winker and that Eugenio Suarez was like, oh, well, if it works out, great. And if not, you know, you got Winker. I'm just so pleasantly surprised overall by what he's been able to deliver this year. Are you also, or is this what you were expecting?
I slightly surprised, maybe like a little bit, mostly because of the consistency we've seen. Like, you know, he's not out there hitting 280, and he doesn't have 25 home runs, not Aaron Judge. But before the season started, it was basically, hey, if he can get back to kind of maybe like where he was in 2016, 2017, when he's tossing up, you know, slightly above league average, you know, numbers across the board led by power, like this is a find. And kudos to Jerry DePoto in that front office for looking at that trade, like, yes, we think Jesse Winker is the bat in this, but we really think Eugenio Suarez has a chance to help us and to fill a need for us at third base. And he's done that. I tweeted yesterday, he's been the sixth most valuable third baseman in all of Major League Baseball this season. I mean, the Mariners, you know, essentially, at least up to this point, heading into today's game, upgraded a little bit at third base with Kyle Seager retiring and making the trade for Suarez. I don't know that I saw that coming, but I thought he could go out there and hit 230, 240 and hit 25, 30 home runs. I mean, you know, the power is just going to come. I think what we're seeing right now is a healthy Suarez, knowing that he's going to be in the lineup, getting back to a little bit where he was prior to the shoulder thing that he had. And I don't know that the shoulder injury and subsequent surgery is the reason why he dipped in 2020 and 2021, but I do think before then he was a little bit of a different hitter and not so, you know, get the ball in the air and hit the home run to my pull side kind of a hitter. And we're seeing him go the other way more, including the big hit, you know, over the weekend. And that's more of a hitter than a guy that's just trying to yank every ball out of the ballpark. And I think he's just getting back to that right now.
You know, Jason, one of the other things that has been a really nice surprise, I shouldn't say surprise, but just, you know, monitoring and watching is George Kirby. And George Kirby obviously had a start to remember and then kind of goes through a little bit of a tough stretch there for three starts. And his last two starts, he's really been solid. What have you seen from George Kirby, and what is the where's the arrow in terms of George Kirby and how he's performing right now?
Yeah, I think what's fun about this is he's going to throw strikes, right? When he walks two or three, we're like, whoa, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have to wait till he walks five in a game to kind of pull that back and say something's up. So he will throw strikes with fastball and slider. And I think the arrow is certainly pointing up here. And the big thing with Kirby is he's missing more bats with his fastball than I expected. Fastball shape is such an important thing. Getting movement on the fastball is so important in Major League Baseball these days because those hitters can hit everything. You can throw 97 up there, and if it's straight enough or you hang it and you leave it out over the plate, they're going to hit it, and they're going to hit it a long way. They're going to do damage with it. It's not a single up the middle. They're going to hit it out of the ballpark or ring it off the wall. So you have to be careful with that. So I was worried that Kirby wasn't going to get enough fastball value, but boy, he is. They've done something with him to get more movement, to change the shape of that pitch, and that's been really big for him. And he will throw strikes with it, and that and the slider. His curveball is actually a pretty good pitch. And I think right now the biggest reason why he's not using it enough is because the curveball is very dangerous. So if you hang that curveball, I mean, we just talked about leaving a fastball over the middle. You hang a curveball, they're going to hit it every time. They're not just going to hit it sometimes. They're going to hit it every time. So they're being careful with that. You're seeing a few more changeups than we are curveballs right now. But ultimately, he's a four-pitch guy that he's going to be able to throw strikes with. And we're really only seeing him use two and then kind of occasionally mix in one of those other two. But he's going to be a legit four-pitch guy just like Logan Gilbert. So they're just kind of bringing him along slowly, mostly fastball slider right now, mixing the changeup. I think the changeup's going to end up being his third-best pitch and his second-best secondary. We may start seeing that more as the season moves along. But his pitchability, and he repeats his delivery. And when you do that, and we saw the opposite of that in Matt Brash, when you do what George Kirby does to get to the same release point consistently and throw strikes, your pitches will develop faster that way. When you don't do that, you're having to throw too many fastballs, or you're sticking to your two-pitch combination because going to the curveball and the changeup, those opportunities are not there. Kirby's kind of creating and laying out his own development path by being able to repeat and throw strikes. I'm really excited for what George Kirby has done thus far. And what's going to be interesting is to see how the Mariners manage his workload this year. I think they're going to be okay. I don't think they anticipated having to call him up as early as they did. And I'm getting a lot of questions about, you know, they called him up earlier, so does that mean they're going to have to shut him down? Well, the innings in the minors count too, so I don't think that's the case. And I think Seattle's in really good shape there. And they're going to be able to go Ray, Kirby, Gilbert with Flexen and Marco at the back end throughout the entire season, unless they pick up a pitcher at the trade deadline.
After a bit of a tough start, Jared Kelnick's been playing very well with AAA Tacoma. How long would you leave him down there?
All year. Hey, for me, there, unless we have mass injury issues, particularly with outfielders at the big league level, Jared Kelnick's down in Tacoma for the remainder of the AAA season. There's nothing that could convince me I should recall Jared Kelnick before the season is over. And obviously the AAA season ends and the rosters expand at the big league level by a couple. You have the opportunity to get him back without having to play him on a regular basis with the extra roster spot. So maybe you call him up in September, you know, and kind of see what happens, because he could help you. Mm-hmm. But at this point, rushing him back, pulling him back, I want to see not just results. And this is the thing that gets lost sometimes. Guy goes down for 2 or 3 weeks, hits 300, hits for power. Yeah, he's doing that against AAA pitching. Great. What is he doing that's showing me that he's going to be able to do some of this on some consistent basis against big league pitching? Because guys, one of the kind of the lost facts here in Major League Baseball is the gap between AAA and the big leagues, especially when it comes to pitching. If there were big league quality pitchers in AAA, they would be in the big leagues. Those guys would actually be in the big leagues. So they're not there very long, if they're there at all. So Jared Kelnick's down there facing less than pitching and getting right, and that's fine, and he's finding barrels, and hopefully he can cut down on the strikeouts and all that good stuff. But I want to see things that convince me, at, you know, from a big league standpoint, if I call up Jared Kelnick, is he going to be able to handle the 89-mile-an-hour lefty with a deceptive slider, and then the next inning, 97 from a righty with a dart slider at 90 miles. Is he going to be able to handle that? What tells me he's going to be able to handle that? Until I feel comfortable with that and start seeing that down in the minors, whether it's mechanical changes, just big time, long term consistency, putting the bat on the ball and cutting down the strikeouts, hitting the ball in the gap, hitting the ball the other way, I'm leaving him down there. I mean, this is something that should have happened a year ago. When they sent him down a year ago, they didn't leave him down long enough. He was rushed at first. He was rushed back. It was turning into a little bit of a Dustin Ackley kind of a situation, a Mike Zunino kind of a situation. And I think the Mariners would be doing Kelnick a service instead of a disservice. Just leave him alone for a while and see what happens late in the season when September rosters expand and you can call him up.
All right, good stuff from Jason Churchill at Prospect Insider, host of the Baseball Things podcast. Jason, thanks so much for taking the time.
Anytime, Stacey. Jake.
See ya.
Thank you, Jason.
Sunday, June 12th is Little League Day at T-Mobile Park. All kids 14 and under will receive a pair of Ty France wristbands presented by the Mariners Kids Club. So get your tickets now at mariners.com/promotions. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, the Warriors rebounded in Game 2 with a blowout win over the Celtics to even up the NBA Finals at one game apiece. What's the real headline?
Thank you to the Warriors for saving us from the only thing more insufferable than Boston sports fans with a 1-0 series lead. And that's Boston sports fans with a 2-0 series lead.
Amen. Yeah.
Really appreciate
Amen.
It.
There's a
Thank
great
you,
line
Warriors.
from a Knicks fan hype video that I would say can't, but I think it every time.
How about we just go with bing bong?
Expletive Boston.
Yeah.
Is that
expletive
how it goes?
Boston.
Or
yeah.
Tom Brady is a beep.
Yeah.
All, one of the all-time greatest videos, fan videos. There's no doubt about it, but the Warriors, thank you. Shout out to the Warriors for evening this thing up. And honestly, you know, so far in this series, in the finals, this has not been a very fun finals. I mean, honestly, yeah. I mean, sure, the games have been close at times, but they've been blowouts. They have been blowout wins by both Boston in Game 1 and by the Warriors in Game 2. Are we going to get a close game? Is this going to buckle down and become a close game, or is this going to be a dud, Stacey? Please don't tell me it's going to be a dud.
I don't know. I mean, we're going to find out Wednesday, June 8th is the next meeting, Golden State at Boston for this one, 6 p.m. tip. So we shall see.
Ugh.
Have you guys seen how far spread out these games are in the NBA Finals?
Yeah, they're like 2 or 3 days.
It ends.
It's unbelievable.
If it goes to Game 7, it ends on the 19th of June.
Game 5
So we're 2 weeks
13th.
Away from potentially the series
yes.
ending.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about this forever.
Never
Let's
stop.
Just keep that money rolling in,
That's
people.
That's exactly what it is. It's So the schedule right now for Game 3, 4, 5, Wednesday, June 8th, Game 3. And then Game 4, Friday, June 10th. That one's only just the next day. Okay. Then there's 2 days in between. Monday, June 13th is Game 5.
so funny. I just feel like it's like one of those things where the NBA season just refuses to go away. They're just hanging on to their life. They're like, we're not going away.
We're still
just
here.
Yet. We're here.
When you're pulling like a cat away from a bed and its claws are like in something. No!
It's exactly what it is.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two. You love to see it. The Angels have lost 11 games in a row. What's the real headline?
Hey-o!
The city of Anaheim hasn't seen a drop like this since Splash Mountain. That's a Disneyland joke.
Yeah.
And I love it. There, yes.
Get it? Disneyland I got, Anaheim?
Yeah. I got a lot of flack from listeners for not having been to Disneyland.
Well,
just appropriating.
Look, I don't think you should get flack. What I think you should get is pity.
Thank you.
You should get pity.
I would like to
that
say my
you
parents
have not
love me.
Been. I, well,
that's good.
That is very good.
We just didn't go to Disneyland.
And I respect your parents' decision to not take you, but I also wonder why. Why
well,
not?
I probably didn't.
Why not
I
give you that magical experience of Disneyland?
You were asking for like Rosart crayons and
yeah, well,
Lisa
I just,
Frank binders.
I didn't like rides when I was little. I didn't like roller coasters. I didn't like literally any ride.
But Stacey, there are like little things that you could do, like the teacups. That's not a ride.
I know why Stacey didn't go.
Why?
Why?
She's too short to ride the ride.
That's not funny. That's not funny. That's not funny. That's not funny.
Is that what it was?
Excuse you. I am tall enough to ride rides.
Oh, Stacey. That is so sad.
When I was a child, was I? None of your business.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, there are conflicting reports today about the sale of the Denver Broncos. Forbes magazine saying Walmart heir Rob Walton has purchased the team for $4.5 billion. Meanwhile, ESPN's Adam Schefter says that there is currently no front runner at this time. What's the real headline?
The Broncos almost changed their mind on the sale, but hey, they got to pay for that Russell Wilson contract somehow.
Shake out all the couch cushions.
Dollars somewhere lying around here.
Look in your, just look in your pockets, right? I mean, your
I
pockets always have loose change. Where else do you typically find loose change? The laundry room?
Russell Wilson.
Oh, yeah, the dryer.
Wilson is a talented quarterback. He clearly is. And I think that the Broncos made the right decision in trading for him because that was their missing piece. It would be a tough sell for me to pay Russell Wilson $50 million.
Well, interesting part is that there was a false report that was out there that negotiations are beginning and here's his asking price and all this, and everybody ran wild with it. It's not true. They're not in negotiations at all. But with that being said, you know, the market's the market. And I don't know how it's going to shake out. I don't know ultimately what he's going to ask for. But Stacey, the highest paid contract right now is $50 million. That's Aaron Rodgers. 46 is Deshaun Watson. He's the next closest, and his is fully guaranteed. So I wonder how that is all going to come together. And I really do feel like the feeling on giving that contract to Russell Wilson one way or the other, whether it's in between 46 or 50 or whatever the case may be, is going to be a bit dependent upon the season that he has this year.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're not looking at Green Bay and saying, what are you doing giving Aaron Rodgers that kind of money? He's won back-to-back MVPs, right? So clearly you understand that, and it's a little more palpable. If Denver goes out there and they have a great year or Russell has a great year, I think they're willing to cash that check in and not take a second thought about it.
The thing that makes it interesting, though, is their division. Because
if not,
Green Bay's been playing in a division where they can, in more years than not, just completely take over.
That is a very good point.
Denver may well finish with a very talented roster in last place. I think it'll be the Chargers, actually Raiders. But.
It's a really good point because in the long run, right, when you're talking about over the next 4 or 5 years when this contract is, I mean, you're in an arms race. The AFC West has now become the new top division in the NFL, and can you keep pace with paying a quarterback at that kind of money? That's a great question. I mean, I don't know their roster. I don't know their contracts like that, but it certainly puts more pressure on you, and Kansas City is currently going to go through that with Patrick Mahomes, dealing with him for the first time. His money now hits their caps for the first time, real money, this year, and then it will be even bigger next year. So a lot of that's going to all come together. But you're going to have that problem in the AL West because you have Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert will get his contract at some point, and Derek Carr wants a new deal.
Oh, and by the way, all of those teams also added a ton of great pass rushers.
Right.
Other elite
talent. I mean, if you're going to pay Derek Carr, you got to pay him top of the market, right?
No, that's exactly right, because he's a top five, three.
I will say this.
I
have a feeling that Derek Carr, yeah, listen to me, Derek Carr will probably be a top five passer in yards this year.
Yeah, he was one last year. I'm not surprised by that.
I think that he will very easily be that.
Derek Carr, sneaky, is usually a top quarterback in passing yards.
Derek Carr could threaten Tom Brady's record for Super Bowl rings.
Oh,
if we're talking projecting, right?
You guys are just trying. So last year he was top five. He was 4,800 yards. I think he will surpass 5,000 yards this year.
Yeah, he's got Devontae Adams. I mean,
mean that they're going to win games? No.
Look,
I don't think said, I don't necessarily believe that
who
correlates.
Said wins
who
determine
said
but, anything yeah. about a quarterback's
yeah,
success?
Yeah, who said actual wins is a measure of success?
I don't. I've literally never said that. I've never heard anyone
say
it.
Hey, we value yards over touchdowns. 4,800 yards. Yeah. 23 touchdowns, yeah. 14 interceptions. That's all that matters.
You come to our quarterback camp.
We'll teach you how to throw
Curtis,
the rock around.
Yeah, Curtis and Stacy make quarterbacks better than Jake Camp LLC. It's all about stats, baby.
Well,
how
cool
weird
is
this?
We count interceptions as yards completed.
Look, every single quarterback in the top 10 in yards has over 30. Hold on, let me look at this. Has over 34 touchdowns. 34 touchdowns.
Well, yeah.
Except for Derek Carr with 23.
Well, I mean,
look. Minor detail.
Yeah, that's not really important. That's not an important part
of the conversation. Touchdowns aren't important. Okay.
It's Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and SeattleSports.com. Coming up next, Derek Carr's future in. I'm just kidding. We're taking a look around the NFL. Don't go anywhere.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
This hour of Jake and Stacy brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Time to take a look around the NFL. We're going to start with an article on NFL.com, compiled by Nick Shook, author of many a fun list on NFL.com. He's got the most reliable pass catchers. I do not think you're going to guess number one or two. I'm positive you won't. In fact, before I even list out the top 10.
Are you serious?
Why don't you take a guess? Take just a stab at guessing number one and two.
Okay.
Don't look at my computer.
Okay, sorry.
It's cheating.
Did I miss that there was an age to this, or is this just the top pass catchers?
Top 10 pass catchers.
Okay.
And
I'm starting with one.
I should say it's by catch rate over expected.
Catch rate over expected.
Yes, which measures the difficulty of completion using a number of
factors.
Okay,
is Tyler Lockett
in
this? He has to be in this.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
Tyler Lockett's definitely in this.
He is not number one or two. He's number three, actually.
Number three. Okay. Let me look at some names here. I'm going to put Justin Jefferson.
Nope.
No.
Nope.
Okay. How about Mike Williams?
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
Devontae Adams.
Devontae Adams is on this list at number 8.
Mike Evans?
Mike Evans is not. Now, these aren't just best receivers. These aren't anything. It's specifically catch rate over expected. The most reliable pass catchers.
Hunter Renfro.
Mark Andrews?
The answer to Next Gen Stats top 10 pass catchers by CROE.
Uh-huh.
Number two, Christian Kirk, new Jacksonville Jaguar,
what?
Who completely totally reset the wide receiver market.
Now I know why they paid 20.
Catch rate is 74.8%. Expected catch rate is just 65.4%. So catch rate over expected, almost 10%. Okay?
Okay.
So it's basically your maximum value in Arizona.
Uh-huh.
Number one, it is a Bengals player.
T. Higgins.
I thought you were going to guess Jamar Chase. I thought T. Higgins,
that was going to be the next name that came out of my mouth, but okay, interesting.
Now, so it's not like best wide receivers, it's just by kind of like.
Yeah. Well, and it makes sense because, you know, Joe Burrow did give T. Higgins a lot of jump ball opportunities, and this was a real, real breakout year for him, and it's exciting to see. I saw that talent and ability when I coached him in high school for the Elite 11 Nike opening.
Yeah.
But I think that when you're talking about these difficult catches, that's where also it's really fun to see some of these receivers who are very underrated.
Right, who can make, though, great catches on balls that are less likely to be caught.
Correct, because it also highlights a couple different abilities. One, either you're somebody like T. Higgins who's got a really long frame and can go and get and snatch the football,
yeah,
or you're somebody like Christian Kirk or Tyler Lockett who are undersized but also have a really good feel for how to use their body
awareness
and put it
too
in position.
Yeah.
And use their, you know, leverage to their advantage to be able to make some of these catches. So, very, very interesting. I was not anticipating Christian Kirk being number two on this list. That's a big shock.
All right, the number of lawsuits facing Cleveland Browns quarterback Deshaun Watson has grown from 23 to now 24. Another woman filed a civil lawsuit against Watson this week.
Okay.
So the lawsuit, which I will edit for air, it was two encounters with Deshaun Watson. In the first, he had to leave abruptly after taking a phone call. The second one is obviously the one that stemmed to what the woman felt was sexually inappropriate advances, and that is the one stemming into the lawsuit.
I mean, hey, Curtis, just to check on this situation, is there any update on terms of what the NFL is doing about this?
No.
There's
investigating.
Ongoing investigation to see if he violated the league's
but there's,
personal conduct
there have been no conclusions made on the NFL's part.
Ah, okay, so we're just sitting here with the 24th lawsuit that's out there, mm-hmm, and we're no update as to whether he's going to play or not this year.
I would almost guarantee he's suspended for some period of time.
He has to be, right?
Because again, it's you can be jury, judge, executioner if you're Roger Goodell and decide, and Roger Goodell might decide. It is a horrible look for me to not suspend him. And by the way, you don't have to be found guilty in any kind of criminal trial. If you were found guilty in a criminal trial, you would be gone out of the league. But the violating the league's personal conduct policy doesn't always overlap with any actual outcomes in your court case. So you can be investigated, you can be charged, and you can have charges dropped, and the league could still find that you violated the personal conduct policy.
And that's why I'm also very surprised that it's taken this long to make this decision, because it's not the decision here for their personal conduct policy does not necessarily have to do with what is brought down.
No, but
by
the Browns structuring of his contract can probably tell you that they are certainly expecting a suspension.
It's tough. I mean, when you're talking about the NFL, it's not tough in regards to my feelings about this. It's tough watching the NFL sputter on this. Like, you would love to see them take I always believe that you're innocent and proven guilty, okay? Innocent and proven guilty, that's the justice system in our country, and I will 100% stick by that. But when you have somebody in your company that has 24 lawsuits against them, how do you then parade them out onto the football field?
Yeah.
I just will never, ever get on board with that. So I'm the NFL has to do something here. They have to step in. And also one of the big dilemmas for the NFL in this circumstance is that these cases are probably not going to get solved anytime soon. That's what the conversation is that a lot of these cases aren't going to be solved until late 2023 and maybe not even till 2024. So what do you do in the meantime if you're the NFL? This is a bad situation, and the Cleveland Browns have walked them themselves into this situation. I still can't believe that they gave out all the guaranteed money that they did. It's just unbelievable to me.
All right, last story here. Going to the NFC West, where Jimmy G is not at mandatory minicamp, but that doesn't mean there's a trade. He's actually gotten an excused absence because he had shoulder surgery 3 months ago. I got to say, if you were to tell me in June that Jimmy G would still be on the 49ers roster, I might be surprised.
That Jimmy G will be on the roster?
No. I mean, when we were heading into the offseason, thinking who might move,
yes,
who might be traded, I thought that Jimmy G would be one of the players.
I thought so too. I mean,
he is one of the few players still behind after a chaotic offseason.
And they say that his surgery that he had to have on his shoulder is one of the things that is holding him back. And I guess that is true. But I also have to imagine, Stacey, it's not just the surgery. It's the fact that the 49ers are probably holding out for like a second or a third rounder. the asking price for Jimmy Garoppolo, to me, is probably more of what's holding back a trade for Jimmy G than anything else. Mm-hmm. And everyone else is looking at it and saying, all right, look, we want to go out and get a, you know, top line, front line, superstar quarterback, and we're willing to do that for a franchise quarterback. What we're not willing to do is get somebody that is a game manager and someone like Jimmy Garoppolo, someone who has had success in this league, no doubt about it, but unless he is a game manager. So giving up a second or a third rounder for that type of player, the league obviously has said, yeah, no thanks. Like, yeah, we're not interested in that. So puts the 49ers in a very interesting position.
All right, coming up here in a couple minutes, we had Jason Churchill on earlier this hour, and he said something about Jared Kelnick that had the entire text line exploding. I got so many responses from this. I'm going to tell you what he said, and we'll find out whether or not we agree. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, we've got Mariners outfielder, infielder Sam Haggerty joining us in 15 minutes. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we're going to talk about Seahawks OTAs. They're going to start mandatory minicamp pretty soon here. I'm going to take a look at that Deshaun Watson news that I spoke about, whether or not that impacts the odds of seeing Baker Mayfield in Seattle. So again, all of that coming your way just a little bit later in the show. Before we move on, though, we had a conversation with Jason Churchill earlier. And Jake, what would you say is the moment that stuck out to you most?
He said that he's still got the confidence in Robbie Ray that every time he hits the mound that it's, you know, they've got a great chance to win, which I think a lot of people would hear that and be like, oh, based off of the 11 starts that he has had
tonight, really important. He said if there's going to be an important key figure to this series against the Houston Astros, it's going to be the one you're going to see on the mound night one.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that in regards to how important Robbie Ray's performance will be. However, the next thing that he said is the question you asked about Jared Kelnick.
Yep.
When would you feel like the appropriate time is to bring him back up? And you know, I mean, he had a pretty strong answer.
Here's what happened. After a bit of a tough start, Jared Kelnick's been playing very well with AAA Tacoma. How long would you leave him down there?
All year. Hey, for me, unless we have mass injury issues, particularly with outfielders at the big league level, Jared Kelnick's down in Tacoma for the remainder of the AAA season. There's nothing that could convince me I should recall Jared Kelnick before the season is over. And obviously the AAA season ends and the rosters expand at the big league level by a couple. You have the opportunity to get him back without having to play him on a regular basis with the extra roster spot. So maybe you call him up in September, you know, and kind of see what happens because he could help you.
I saw so many mixed reactions to this from listeners. Some people said, no way, bring him back up. Other people said, leave him down for longer. Don't even bring him up in September. Forget, like, all calendar year, leave him down there.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about it?
I'm right there with him. I mean, if there is anybody that you could look at and say, did they do the right thing by bringing him up as early as they did? Obviously, hindsight 2020, you look back with Jared Kelnick and you say the answer is clearly no. And there may be a feeling that the organization had, and they spoke to it, they said it, that they felt like Jared Kelnick needed to fail at the big league level because that's where they felt like he was going to get challenged. That was their wording. Not mine, that was theirs. And I understand that to a degree. However, now that you look back at it, you're telling yourself, you got to remind yourself that Jared Kelnick is incredibly young. He's incredibly young. He is one of the youngest AAA players in all of baseball. So don't give up on this kid yet. Don't give up on him. He's still got a long way to go in regards to when he is not going to be, you know, when he's going to be considered a bust or whatever. Like, he's got a very bright future still, and I'm not giving up on Jared Kelnick, but he needs time to really develop and focus on his development in his weak points so that when he does come back up, that it's permanent, that it's there for forever, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of going back in this constant, oh, up and down, up and down, up and down, where you never really truly get that time to work on your game, Stacey. And in my opinion, it's just more about, oh, let's get Jared Kelnick to feel good again. get him a couple hits, gain his confidence, and we're going to bring him back up. It just is a never-ending cycle, and you don't want to put him in that situation.
Yeah, Jason pointed this out. So again, this is part of that conversation we had with him, which you can listen to on the Jake and Stacey podcast, kicking off hour three. He pointed to pitching and the gap between not only the minors and majors, but also the gap between AAA pitching and major league pitching, and mm-hmm. saying like it's one thing to see Jared Kelenic just mashing at that level, but when he was talking about what he specifically wants to see, it's the right kind of adjustments to different pitchers. It's change-ups, it's facing left-handed guys, it's facing lots of different looks in the same game, and being able to adjust within the same game. And I agree with him. It's not like a note when you see it is kind of cheapening the real evaluation that goes into it. But I feel like what Jason was alluding to is that there is kind of an intangible feeling you want to be able to have with Jared Kelenic when you're like, he's ready. And you may not have that feeling unless you watch him for a couple months.
Yeah, 100%. And it's little things, right? I mean, when you're talking about Jared Kelenic, it's not just about the batting average. It's not just about the home runs and the RBIs and those types of things. You know, it is about what does his swing miss rate look like? How is he using all fields, right? How is he hitting the off-speed stuff in comparison to the fastball? And as Jason said, you know, Jason Churchill said that, look, the pitching, as you also said, that it's very different from AAA to the major league. So it's not, you know, a direct comparison, but those are the little things inside just the overall slash line that you're looking for as an organization for Jared Kelenic to really develop and to feel confident in doing so. Because I'll tell you this, Jared Kelenic is one of the most talented players in any farm system. It's not a talent issue. It's his willingness, in my opinion, to use all fields, to take all pitches, and be okay hitting it the other way. And if he can find comfort in doing that, I think the sky's the limit for him. But each time that he's been called up, or his experiences thus far, it has not worked out very well. A lot of it due to impatience. Mm-hmm. A lot of it to when things aren't going right. What does he do, Stacey? He doesn't fall back on easy swing. I'm okay driving it the other way like Julio has done early in his career. It's been, I'm going to grip the ball, I'm going to grip the bat tighter, I'm going to crush a fastball, and that's how I'm going to get myself back. And that has been a bad cycle for him, and it's going to take some time for him to really grow in that. And we talked to Taylor Trammell about this from a mental side of the game, a sports psychology side of the game, that I think Jared Kelenic really just needs to continue to grow and really dive into and tap into to get the most out of his talent. And that takes time. You can't just send him down for a couple weeks and then expect him to all of a sudden be this all-star player.
Curtis, just to check in with you, check in with Jake. We're all in agreeance with Church, right, Churchill?
Yes.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine living in a world, and I've seen this, for Mariners fans to say, we need to send this guy down, to then watch his slash line improve and increase and do well in AAA and say, we got to get this guy back.
Well, yeah, if you rush him back, if you call him back up immediately after sending him down, yeah. I don't think he's learned the lessons he needs to learn.
No, and then you get this cycle that then messes with a guy's mentality and confidence.
Yes, and it is a very short-sighted approach that is very easy to fall into the trap of, right? Is Kyle Lewis going to come back anytime soon? We don't know.
Right.
Is Mitch Haniger coming back anytime soon? We don't know. So the back half of this lineup, it would be nice to see a boost. But guess what? Jared Kelenic, long-term, it's more important to get that right than a short-term answer or fix that most likely is not going to be there, and he's not ready for that yet.
If Deshaun Watson suspended for any time this season, does it take Baker Mayfield out of the conversation with the Seahawks? That's coming up in four down territory in 20 minutes. Before then, though, Mariners outfielder, infielder Sam Haggerty joins us. Don't go anywhere.